Okay, we're going to start here on Lamed Daled Amud Aleph, about 8 lines down. The Gemara says, Abayir bar Avin, Rav Chananya bar Avin, Tanu Chumot bei Rabo. They were learning Masechet Chuma by Rabo. Paga Bahu Rava bar Matno. They were walking and they bumped into Rava bar Matno. And he starts to ask them, Amar Lahu, said to them, Mayim Ritu bei Chumot de Beimar. What did you learn in Chumot de Beimar? Mar being Rab over here, in the house of our master, in the house of Rabba. So they understood from his querying, Amrulei, my kashalucha. What's bothering you? Obviously something's bothering you in Chumot, and that's why you're asking us this question. So I'm like, oh, I'll tell you what's bothering me. It's not. There's a Mishnah in Chumot. It says, Shtilei Chumot, if you plant Chuma, Shinit Me'u, that became Tamei. So you have Chuma Tmeha, that was planted, Vishat Lan, and then they were replanted afterwards. Tehorim militame. They are tohor in conveying of tumah. Vasurim leachol. But you still can't eat them. So now this is the question, and this is what he wants to understand about the Mishnah. If you are successful by taking tumah that was once planted, shtile, these are these young saplings of tumah that were picked. Now he has them, and they're chayav in tumah. And he took off the chuma from the tevel. Then he takes this chuma that became tmeah, and he wants to replant the item. In replanting the item, it sounds like from the Mishnah that the replanting of the item is successful at removing the tumah from the item. So if it's successful at removing the tumah from the item, then why is it asurim leachol? Why is it impermissible to eat it? Impermissible to eat it sounds like it's still chuma tmeah. If it's chuma tmeah, that's when it's impermissible to eat. But if we're successful at removing the tumah from it, why is it asur le'achol? So v'hima achardei tohorim le'tameh. If they are tohorim, now they do no longer convey tumah because you're successful in replanting them to make them tohor. Amay asurim le'achol. Then why can't you eat them? Why can't the kohen eat this? So amalei achi amar Rabbo. This is the way Rabbo explained the Mishnah. May asurin. What does the word asur mean in this Mishnah? Asurin lizarim. It means that they are sur for non-kohanim to eat. Which means that, yes, you're successful at removing the tumah from it, but you're not successful at doing is removing the shame tumah from it. So it remains tumah, but it goes from being tumah tmeah to tumah tehora. Umay gamash malan. So what does that teach us? Gidulei tumah tumah. That tumah that is planted is considered to be tumah even after it's planted. Tanina. We have an explicit Mishnah that says that. Gidulei tumah tumah. The Mishnah Trumot says straight out. You plant tumah, it remains tumah after the fact. If you think that it is a derivative of the planting. So now, Gidulei Gidulim, Rashi and Tosafot disagree about how to explain this. The Riva in Tosafot explains Gidulei Gidulim means you planted it once, and then you picked it, and you planted it again a second time. So the same idea, you planted it once it was Trumat Me'ah, then you picked it again, and then you replanted again. Even if you do that, you're not successful at removing the Truma. That's one possibility. That's the way he explains it. Rashi explains that the whole case here of Gidulei Gidulim in the Gemara is a case of what we call Ein Zaro Kala. There are two types of items that you can plant. You can plant something where the seed itself disintegrates, rots, and is no longer there. And so then something grows from it. There are other items, which are basically bulbs, or mostly type of root type of vegetables, where the item that's there remains there even afterwards. For instance, you plant an onion, and it expands afterwards, it grows bunches of onions around it, but the original onion is still there. So that's something called She'ein Zaro Kala. So Rashi claims the Gidulei Gidulim are the new onions that grow around the original onion that's replanted. So that's what Rashi calls Gidulei Gidulim. So the Gemara says here, V'chigitema Gidulei Gidulim. That's what it's teaching us. That still remains Truma. Umayka Mashalan, again, what's that teaching us? B'dvar She'ein Zaro Kala. If you're talking about a case where the item is still intact, meaning that the item that you plant, the seed, or the bulb that's put in the ground remains afterwards, Hanami Tanina, we have a Mishnah about that as well. Now, as far as if the seed is destroyed when you plant it, then it really makes no difference that the fact that you planted it multiple times, because the original item is gone. Each time you replant it, the original item. So if you take a seed, a wheat kernel, and you plant the wheat kernel in the seed, the next stalk that grows has no relationship to the original seed, because the seed's gone. So if you were to replant that afterwards, it's really not meaningful in that sense, because the next item that you're planting is a new seed that grows on the new stalk and has nothing to do with the first seed. So when you talk Gidulei Gidulim, you have to be talking about something She'ein Zaro Kala, talking about something where a bulb or the original item is still intact. as it stands, and then you have a case where you can pant it multiple times. Right, but there's still that seed, once you plant it, it grows a new sunflower, and that has seeds in the new sunflower. So the original seed is no longer, yes, it grew from the original seed, but the original seed is no longer there. You can't find it anymore. There's not a single seed in this sunflower that's the original seed. As opposed to the onion, one of the onions is still the original onion that you planted. So that Gidulei Gedulim is only really relevant when Zain Zarokala. Again, Tosfot says you just took the same onion, you planted it, you took one onion, you planted it, and then you took that growth and you planted it again. On the other hand, Rashi claims that it's the onions around it, the new onions that grow, those are called Gidulei Gedulim. So then we have a Mishnah that already describes it, Hatevel. Now, Tevel is different than Truma, because by Tevel, Gidulav Mutarim. As opposed to Truma, Tevel, if you plant Tevel in the ground, that Tevel now becomes totally Mutar again. Now, in terms of Tevel, once something is Tevel, you have to be Mafrish Trumot and Masrot from it. When you're Mafrish Trumot and Masrot from it, then it becomes Mutar to eat. If you do not Mafrish Trumot and Masrot from it, it remains Tevel. Now, in terms of the Tevel, if it remains Tevel, then you're chayav to take off Trumot Masrot. If you replant it in the ground and then pick it again, the truth is it's going to end up being Tevel again when you pick it. But there is a window between the time that you have the Gemar Malocha and the time that you pick it, where it's mutar to eat Achilat Arai, where you can eat from it snack or temporary meals that come out of it, because it's yet to be Nikva, it's yet to be Koveya for Trumot Masrot. So by planting it, you really open up that window again of achilat arai, or feeding it to your animals. So that we say, by tevel, that is permissible. And that's what Rashi says over here, v'afagav d'gulei truma, truma. Even though we consider d'gulei truma to be truma, midrabonon hu udo chumra. It's a din drabonon, it's a chumra, shema shlo yalafsida tekoanim. So tekoanim don't lose out, because if every Yisrael could go plant their truma and make it into chulin again, then you would never give your truma to the Kohen. You'd simply replant it, and then you wouldn't have to give it to the Kohen. You'd get new chulin out of it. About gudulei tevel chulin hein. Gudulei tevel are chulin again. So again, basically you've reset it back to its original state. So it goes back to being pre-tevel, but eventually when you process it, it's going to go back to the same status of tevel. So with regards to tevel, when you plant tevel, it does go reset and back to its original status. Truma, when you replant it, does not work to reset it. There are two reasons for that. One is truma in the core state. We don't let you put truma tara and plant it, because that would help out every Yisrael. Every Yisrael would just plant the truma, not give it to the Kohen, and then end up with chulin. He wouldn't have to give it to the Kohen. So we don't allow that. By truma tmeah, we don't allow the Kohanim to do that, because shema yishaheh, because he'll keep it around. He'll keep the truma tmeah around so he can plant it in order to have it, and then it'll come to a takalah. So we don't allow the Kohanim to leave around the truma tmeah as well. So by truma, you're precluded from planting it, period. By tevel, you could plant it in the first cycle. But in a case of a devar she'en kala, in an item where the original is still extant, the original item is still extant, like a bulb or the onion, afilu gedulei gedulim asur b'achila, even as multiple iterations of this, it's still asur b'achila. So we see here clearly, this is by tevel. Tevel, where we have at least a heter for planting tevel and becoming chulin, even there, v'en zaro kala, and you have gedulei gedulim, it's asur. So certainly by truma, it's going to be asura for gidulei gidulim. So you have over here two mishnayot. One mishnah tells you that gidulei truma is truma, and the other mishnah tells you that gidulei gidulim, meaning when ein zarokala, is also truma. So now what have you taught me? The mishnah that you just explained, what information have you given me? You haven't given me any information. All the mishnah said was, number one is, if you plant it, it becomes tohar, because you got rid of the truma. Number two is, it's azur de zarim, so only Kohanim can eat it because it remains Truma. All that information is something that we know already, because the Truma itself, that it remains Truma, is mentioned in these other two Mishtayot. Ishtiku, they had nothing to respond. So they had learned by Rabbo, that explanation. And now, Rava Bar Matna asks them this question, and poses this question to them, and they have no explanation for it. So Amrulay, so they turned to him and said, Midi Shmielach Baha, did you hear something about this? Maybe you have some explanation of it. So Amrulay, am I Rav Sheshet? He said, yes. I have the explanation of Rav Sheshet. My Asurin, when it says Asur in this Mishnah, Asurim the Kohanim. It's not just Asur to Israel, it's also Asur to Kohanim. Ho, v'fsilu lehu v'hech tzech adat. Because it becomes pasul with hezech adat, with removing one's thought from it, leaving it without watching it. Hezech adat is a problem in general when it comes to items of Tumah. So now, how it works, what the problem of Hesach HaDat is, we're going to see in 1 second, is a machloka damuraim. But we have it, for instance, even in halacha today, with regards to washing one's hands. When you wash your hands, those hands remain teorim as long as you're not misiach dat. As long as you don't take your mind off the hands, you don't think about keeping the hands tahor. As long as you think about those hands being teorim, they remain tahor from that time or point that you washed. And that's why you may be able to wash in morning and have that be good for the whole day in terms of amotzi, as long as you're not misiach dat from your hands. If you're misiach dat from your hands, then you have to wash again. It's true in the world of tumah, meaning that your hands become ashamed of tumah. It's true because of the way we wash for netilat yadayim for amotzi, which derives from that same consideration that hesach hadat causes there to be tumah, causes there to be a problem. Now, what the problem is, I'm describing it as tumah, but that's not so clear. That comes out of the machloket amoraim here. So they hanicha lemandamar hesach hadat psul haguf uhavi shapir. If you say that hesach hadat is an inherent problem in tumah, an inherent problem means, because of the male of the Kedusha, because it's such a high level of Kedusha, we want you to be focused on the Kedusha. If you take your mind off the Kedusha, it ruins the object. The object becomes pasul. That's it. Because you aren't focused on it, it loses its status. It becomes pasul. So if that's the case, then it makes sense what you're saying here. You plant the item in the ground, and the Tumah that you removed is gone because you planted it. The Tumah remains Tumah. But what's the chiddush over here? Even a kohen can't eat it over here because you have a problem of hesach hadat. Once it's in the ground, you're not watching it. You don't have your mind on it anymore. It's gone. It's out of sight. It's out of mind. If that's the case, now you have a psul aguf, and psul aguf in tumah makes it psul gamrei. And that way, nobody can eat it. Not a zar and not a kohen. Elo the manda amar hesach hadat psul tumah havi. According to the amora who says that hesach hadat is just a problem in tumah, not that it makes it tamei, but what's the problem of hesach hadat? When you stop watching the item, you stop thinking about the item, the possibility is that it came into contact with tumah. And that's the problem with your daim. Your daim are askaniotim. They touch things unbeknownst to you without forethought, without considering it. And because of that, if you don't have your mind on your hands, they automatically come tameh because we assume they came into contact with tumah. There's a high likelihood or a high safek that you came into contact with tumah. So if you say the problem of esach hadat is the contact with tumah, then that doesn't make so much sense over here because... But think about it. When you planted it in the ground, it got rid of tumah. So here, hesach hadat, which is not a problem of real tumah, it's just a problem of chashash. Maybe it will become tameh. If it's planted in the ground, that should remove the tumah also. To say that it removes tumah that pre-exists, tumah tameah, it's removing the tumah when you plant it in the ground, then if you're talking about hesach hadat, which is a chashash, maybe it came tameh, certainly being planted in the ground should get rid of that tumah. There shouldn't be a problem of tumah here whatsoever. So ma'ikalameh, it doesn't work so well. That answer of Rav Sheish works well for the opinion that says it's psula goof, which we'll see as Reish Lakish in a second, but if you say it's a chashash tumah, then it doesn't work so well. Deitmar, and now explains this machloket amoraim, that hesach hadat, Yochanan amar psul tumah havi, Yochanan says it's a problem of safek, it's a problem that we have a chashash, that maybe this item will become tameh. Shimon Lakish, Reish Lakish on the other hand, believes psul haguf havi, it's an inherent problem in the item itself. So again, for Reish Lakish, Rav Sheish's answer will be fine. Rav Sheish's answer says that you have now a psula guf that precludes anybody from eating it, because now it becomes tumah that is problematic. Nothing to do with tumah. It's an inherent, separate psula in tumah. And because of that, nobody can eat it anymore. Not the Kohen, not the Israel. And that's what the Mishnah means by asurim. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yochanan, damar psul tumah, Rabbi Yochanan says that it's a psul tumah, I don't understand how you're going to read this Mishnah that it's asurim for everybody. Tumah, we know that planty can handle it. Now the Gemara explains there are two positions. Rabbi Yochanan amar psul tumavi, shim yavo aliyahu bitarena, shumim lo. It's a psul tumah means that it's a safek whether it became tamei or didn't come tamei. We're going to assume it did become tamei because of the high likelihood, the high level of chashash that such a thing should happen. That means if Eliyahu Navi shows up and tells us it's tahor, we're going to listen to him. Because the whole issue is an issue of safek. And Eliyahu Navi can clear up the safek for us. He can tell us that it isn't tamei. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Lakish Omer Psul Aguf Havi. It's an inherent problem in the Trumah. Meaning it's a Psul like any other Psul that you would have in Kodshim in Trumah. If that's the case, if Eliyahu comes and says it's Tahor, ain't Shomim Lo. Eliyahu Navi has no impact on this. He can't change the fact that you have a Psul Aguf here. He can't make something that's Psul Begufo into something that's Kosher Begufo. He can help you clear up a Safek. He can't take care of something that's inherently problematic. If it's inherently problematic, that's what it will remain. He can't change that. So now, we're going to continue along this discussion of Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and then on the latter half of the daf, we'll come back to this question about how to explain this Mishnah. So, Eitavei, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan challenged Reish Lakish's opinion. He says, is it really Psula Guf? Because we have this. Rabbi Shmuel, Benosh, Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Broko Omer. Lul Katanaya, Ben Kevish, Lamizbeach. There was a small compartment or hole between the ramp and the Mizbeach. The ramp sat on the southern side of the Mizbeach, and it was adjacent to the Mizbeach. It was pressed up against the Mizbeach. Yet there was a small gapping between the Kevesh, between the ramp, and the Mizbeach itself. Within that, there's a small compartment that was there on the western side of the ramp, which is on the southern side. So on that side, there is a small compartment. And that's what it says here, Bamaravo Shel Kevesh, on this western side. The reason it's on the southwestern side is because Shamayu Zorkain Psulei Chata'at Ha'of. By Chata'at Ha'of, Chata'at Ha'of is done on the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach, down on the floor, on the Ritzpah. So since that's where you work with the Chata'at Ha'of, if you have a problem with the Chata'at Ha'of, this compartment is for those problematic Chata'at Ha'of, and it's right nearby. It's on the southwestern side of the ramp, you know, on the side down below. And so too, that's where you're working with the Chata'at Ha'of. Now, if you have a problem, when something went wrong with the Chata'at Ha'of and became pasul, they used to put it into that compartment, and you have to allow it to go bad, meaning overnight. Basically means leave it overnight so that there's lina. Lina creates what we call the psula guf in the korban, and once you have lina, you can take it out and burn it. It's in the Beit HaSreifa. But until that point in time, we won't put it out to the Beit HaSreifa. Now, if you explain like I do, psul tuma have a... that the problem here is a psul tuma, mishum hachi bai ibur tzura. For that reason, you acquire ibur tzura. Shema yavoya leo vitareno. Because if you would burn it right away, you're taking a risk. You're taking a risk that you're wrong, and you're burning it prematurely. Had Eliyahu come afterwards, he might have been mitaharet. So you shouldn't burn it. You wait. Eliyahu mar psula gufu, lamili ibur tzura. If you're right, it's a psula guf, there's nothing to wait around for it. There's no option. The only thing that can happen is it be pasul. If it's pasul now, it's pasul later. So you should be able to burn it immediately. And then, Vatznan, and we have a Mishnah. This is Zach Lau. This is the principle. Kol shepsulo begufo. Anything that's a psula guf, yisareif miyad. You burn it right away. But damu ba'alim, if it's a problem with the blood or with the owners, tubar tzuratan, then you have to wait for the basar, for the flesh to lay overnight to become lina, which is a psula guf. You'll see in the Beit HaSreifa, and then you burn it. So if the basar is problematic, the basar itself has psula guf. For instance, it's notar when it's left over, whether or it's lina, it was left overnight, or it's pigul. All of these are problems in the basar itself, psula guf in the basar. In those instances, or tuma, even tuma in the basar itself, all those items are problematic or considered to be psula guf, and you would burn it immediately. On the other hand, if you have a problem with the balim, with the owners, the real case, or the only case where it really matters, is by Korban HaPesach. By Korban HaPesach, which the necessity of owners to eat the Korban HaPesach is integral to the Korban HaPesach. We're going to spend a lot of time of that later on in the Masechta from the 5th to the 9th Perek on Korban HaPesach. One of the unusual aspects of the Korban HaPesach is that the eating of the Korban is quasi-me'akev, the Korban. With any other Korban, the eating of the Korban has no impact. Once the Korban is brought, the kapara is attained, or the Korban is done, the eating is a bonus. Whereas by the Korban HaPesach, the eating is integral to the Kashruta Korban. And therefore you need people who can eat the Korban. The person who's eating the Korban has to be Tahor. So if you hear you have owners of the Korban, that something went wrong with them all of a sudden, they became Tamei and they can't eat their Korban HaPesach anymore, then all of a sudden you're left with the Pesach without any Baalim. So that's a problem for the Pesach, but it's a problem through the Baalim. Since it's a problem through the Baalim, the Basar is not a Psula Guf. It's not a Psula Guf in the Basar. And therefore, you have to be to done. You have to do lino. You have to do something that creates the psula guf in order to burn it. And in the meantime, you wait it or you keep it around till that point in time. Now, even though dam is integral to the korban, without the zrikat dam, the korban is never mutar, or the basar never becomes mutar. Nevertheless, since it's not in flesh itself, therefore you need ibur tzura for the flesh. Even though something went wrong with the blood, like you spilled the blood, and therefore the blood is never going to harm his back, the basar still needs ibur tzura. Because even though there's a psul in the gufo shel dam, there's no psul in the gufo shel ha basar. But what we learn from this is, if there's a psul aguf, you burn it immediately. If it's not psul aguf, then you wait and do ibur tzura. So in our case over here, the chata'at ha'of, you have a psul in the chata'at ha'of. Now psul in the chata'at ha'of now requires ibur tzura. You have to leave it overnight, which proves that whatever went wrong with this chatat oaf is not a psula guf, it's simply a chashash. Now, how do we know that something went wrong over here? How do we know we're talking about a case of hesach hadat over here? There's no mention of hesach hadat in this Tosefta. So Rashi claims the reason is because there's nothing else. Everything else is already covered. Everything else is a psula guf. Since everything else is a psula guf, the only thing left that could be not a psula guf is hesach hadat. So that's what Rashi claims. It's not such an easy claim, and it's not so pashut. But that's how Rashi claims. The Tosefta is definitely talking about hesach hadat because everything else is already taken care of. We know everything else is a psula guf, so it must be we're talking about hesach hadat. On the other hand, Tosafot mentions over here, it's the last Tosafot on the Amud, Kashalari. How do you know that the problem here is hesach hadat? The problem could be dam balim, like we saw on the next Amud. Dam balim require ibur tzura. So maybe the Tosefta over here is saying you need ibur tzura because there's a problem with the dam, there's a problem with the balim. Dabai ibur tzura. So Tosafot answers, yesh lamar mi gom akom, achar shen izrach belul, yesh bo hesach hadat. Rav Reino Elchanan. He says, yes, you're right. Maybe dam and balim are the problem here. But as soon as you put it into that little compartment, you have hesach hadat. And if hesach hadat is a psula guf, then you don't have to wait anymore. As soon as you put it in there and leave it there and walk away, you have hesach hadat, and then you should be able to burn it immediately. The fact that we wait still until overnight, until there's a psulina in it, shows you that hesach hadat's not enough. Even if though that wasn't the ikar problem, but it's a secondary problem that you create by definition by putting it into the compartment, and creating that problem doesn't solve your problem, doesn't make it that you can burn it right away. You still have to wait. That's how we know that hesach hadat doesn't help out. It's not a psula guf. So this is a question of Rabbi Yochanan to Reish Lakish. Seems from here that hesach hadat is simply a problem in chashash tumah, and that's why you have to wait around with it. That's why you need ibur tzura, the loss of the integrity of the item. You have to let it rot or go bad, basically. But going bad here means it's left overnight. But you don't burn it right away, which indicates it's not a psula guf, and that's against what Reish Lakish told us before. It might be, I'm not going to go into it more, but another answer to the question might have to do with the uniqueness of chatat ha'of. The chatat ha'of, as opposed to other korbanot, does not have kavalat dam b'kli, taken from the bird itself directly onto the tzeach. So the idea of that there's a problem with the dam is less likely to happen, because you're going directly from the bird right into the mizbeach. So the likelihood of a dam problem is less likely, and then by balim, the chatat ha'of is not as problematic, because balim, as opposed to by pesach, where you need someone to eat it in order for the korban to be considered kasher, you need minuim on the Pesach. Over here by chatat ha'of, someone else can eat the chatat ha'of. It doesn't have to be the balim, it doesn't have to be this kohen, it can be any kohen. It can be somebody else who eats the chatat ha'of. So maybe that's why we're left with only hesach hadat, like Rashi explains over here. Nevertheless, we have a question on Abaye. We have a question on Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish responds and says, Amalei, hai tana, tana debay rabba baravuahu. Now, this author of this Tosefta is Rabbi Ravua, Damar Afilu Pigul to Oni Ibur Tzura. He believes everything, including things that are Psula Guf, require Ibur Tzura. We don't bear burn anything immediately. Everything requires Ibur Tzura. So if that's the case, you have no proof from the Tosefta anymore. The fact that it requires Ibur Tzura doesn't prove whether it is a Psula Guf or whether it's a Psula Tuma, because every item in the Kodashim that goes bad requires Ibur Tzura. So now, Eitavei, another question. Nitma Oh, shinifsal habasar, oh shiatza chutz laklaim. You have basar, the flesh, that either became tamei, or for some reason became pasul, or it left the azara. So we're talking about kodshei kodashim, where the flesh of the korban has to remain within the azara in order for the kohanim to eat it. It leaves the azara, it's outside of its realm, and it goes bad, it's bad right away. In this case, you have a problem with the basar. It either became tamei, it became pasul, or it was yotze, left the area that it's supposed to be in. Rabbi Lezo Omer Yizrok. Rabbi Lezo says you can continue with the korban and you can sprinkle the dam on the mizbeach. Rabbi Lezo is of the opinion that the basar is not me'akev. The flesh of the korban is irrelevant. If that goes or disappears, you can still do zrika at the dam. Does not affect the korban. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Lo Yizrok. Rabbi Yeshua says you cannot do zrika at the dam over here because it's important to have the basar. Without the basar, there is no korban. So if you have basar, then you can do zrikat adam. Without basar, you can't do zrikat adam. So in all these cases, the psul ruins the basar over here. By the psul ruining the basar, you don't have basar anymore. Umode Rabbi Yeshua. The Rabbi Yeshua agrees, shim zarak hurtza. That if you did zrikat adam, then it works. Now, why is it hurtza? It's because the tzitz is miratze. In these cases, the tzitz takes care of it. So now you have three issues here with the basar. One issue with the basar is it came tamei. Now, if it became tamei, we know that the tzitz is meratze and tumah. The tzitz, bidyevit, takes care of tumah within kodoshim. So we understand b'di'evit, if it was said basar was tamei, and then he did the zrikat adam, that it's kasher according to Rabbi Shua, because the tzitz takes care of tumah in the mikdash. That's number one. In terms of yotzei, there's a machloket between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua in the Gemara in Zvachim, as well as Menachot, with regards to whether the tzitz can be ratzah and yotzei. And here, Rabbi Yeshua subscribes to the position of Rabbi Akiva, that despite the fact that yotzei, generally, the tzitz shouldn't be miratzeh on, nevertheless, b'di'evit, it is miratzeh, because the basar is still intact. By the mere fact that the basar is still intact, it's sufficient to have the tzitz be miratzeh. There we had a question in the Gemara, whether you have to bring it back into the azara, or even if outside the azara, but that's enough to be miratzeh. The one thing we don't know over here is this one generic term that says nifsal ha-basar. We have tumat ha-basar, we have yotzeh, and then we have nifsal. What is nifsal ha-basar? What does it mean that it became pasul? So now, that's what he says. Rabbi Yochanan, the way the question is posed. Yamart. Now, my nifsal, what is this idea of nifsal? La behesach adat? Must be that the only thing that we have left here to be pasul is hesach adat. So, yamart bishlam apsulei tumavi. If I am right, that hesach adat is really an issue of tumah, hainu mishkach la demarat tzitz. Then I understand why the tzitz takes care of this psul over here, because, like every other psul of tumah, the tzitz can be meratzeh on it. If you think it's an inherent problem in the item, then a mayhurtza, why does the tzitz take care of it? The tzitz can't take care of things like pigul, can't take things where there's a psula goof. The tzitz only takes care of exogenous problems like tumah, or an exogenous problem like yotzei, where it's not something inherent to the basar. But if you have a problem that's inherent to the basar, psula goof of the basar, which is pigul, notar, things like that, the tzitz is not miratzeh. The tzitz can't take care of it. So Reish Lakish, I don't understand. If you think that hesach adat is psula goof, then why is the tzitz helping you out in this case? So he says, no, my nifsal, you got it wrong. You explained nifsal wrong. Nifsal is b'tvul yom. That it became pasul through a tvul yom. A tvul yom touched it, and it became tamei now, and that's why the basar is no good. Iachi anu tamei. Then how is that different than the first instance in the Breita, where tamei is mentioned? You have tamei, and then pasul, which your tamei is tamei also. There's trei gavnei tamei. There are two types of tumah here. There's regular tumah, and there's tumah that is conveyed through a tvul yom. Alright, so that's the question. It's two questions posed by Rabbi Yochanan on Reish Lakish's opinion about psula goof, and in both instances, Reish Lakish answers. In the first case, he answers that it's according to the opinion that says that everything requires ibur tzurah, so you have no proof to me that there's no psula goof here. And in the second case, he says that the psula that we're talking about here is not hesach adat, it's talking about tumah, and that's why it's not a question on me. Now we're back to the original question, the original problem we had that in Mishnah and Trumah. Mishnah and Trumah says that when you take a young growth or sapling and you replant it in the ground after it was Trumah Tmeah, then, number one, it's Tahor Mila Tameh. It does not convey Tumah any longer. Basically, it sounds like it's Tahor. And number two is, it's Asurin. It's still Asur. Asur to whom? We had two opinions. We had the opinion of Rabu, which is Asur Lizarim, but Kohanim can continue to eat it, which is Gedulei Trumah is Trumah. And then we have Rav Sheitz's suggestion, which was that Asurim mean to anybody. Nobody could eat it because of the problem of Hesech Adat. So now we have Kisalik Ravin. Ravin went up to Eretz Yisrael. Amar L'Shmaitei Kameh to Rabbi Yirmia. He said this over in front of Yirmia. Rabbi Yirmia is in Eretz Yisrael. He's taking this memory of Rav Sheitz. Rav Sheitz's explanation of this Mishnah, he's conveying to Rabbi Yirmia in Eretz Yisrael. V'amar, and Rabbi Yirmia responds to him and says, Bavlai Tipshai, you foolish Babylonians. Shum Di'atvei Ba'ara D'Chashocha, because you live in the land of darkness, Amritun Shmaitata Demachashchu. You talk about, you give over ideas or memory that are dark. I mean, that makes no sense. Now, the reason that they call it the land of darkness is because it was in a plain, in a valley. So they call that the land of darkness. Also, it could have some figurative meaning in terms of being in Galut, and therefore, it's the land of darkness. And since you live in the land of darkness, you come up with these ideas or these explanations that you make up on your own that have no basis and are incorrect. Lo shmi eluchu, you never heard? Ha, the Rabbi Shimon Lakish, mishmei the Rabbi Oshaya? You didn't hear over what Reish Lakish says in the name of Rabbi Oshaya? Now, obviously, this is a memra from Eretz Yisrael, so that's probably why they didn't hear it. Now, Ravin and Rav Dimi are people who travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, and they bring these memrot from Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So it seems from here that they didn't have this memra because it's a memra of Reish Lakish in the name of Rabbi Oshaya. Me'achag. Talking about Me'achag is the water that is used for the Nisuch HaMayim on Chag HaSukkot. So in an instance where they drew the water beforehand, that's a case that Shabbat. Nisucha mayim on Shabbat, you have to draw the water on Erev Shabbat. Shenitme'u, they became tmeim. Heshikan, if he does hashaka, v'chakach hikdisham makdishtem teorim, then it works in their Torah. Hikdisham, on the other hand, if he's makdishtem first, v'chakach hishikam, and then he does hashaka, tmeim, then they are tmeim. So what we have to discuss here is what is hashaka. Hashaka is a concept that is used in mikveh, it's still used today in mikvaot today. All mikvaot use this concept today, which is that an example that the Mishnah talks about, and the Mishnah in general talk about, is you have a cup of water. You have a cup of potable water that became tameh. So you could drink this water, but now it's tameh. And you want to be mitaher the water. In order to be mitaher the water, you would have to put it into the mikveh. Now, the water in the mikveh is disgusting. It's water that you don't want to drink. It's not potable water. So what you can do here is take a cup that's filled to the top with water that's potable, and then submerge it into the mikveh. By submerging it into the mikveh, it becomes one with the mikveh. And in becoming one with the mikveh, at that point in time, it is a mikveh and it becomes tahor. That's the concept of hashaka. That if you come in contact, fully in contact with the waters of the mikveh, it's as if you've replanted it, you've submerged it into the waters of the mikveh, it's as if it's a mikveh, it's tahor. And this concept of hashaka is used in the modern day mikveh. There is what we call the boar. The boar has captured within it the water that came from the rainwater and is kosher the mikveh. And around that, we have the mikvaot. The mikvaot that actually source the water not from rainwater, but actually source the water from a tap. They use hamshacha. They pour it into a channel that pours down into the mikveh, but that's maim shuvim. Water that is not kosher for a mikveh. Nevertheless, what we do is we open up. There's a hole between the boar where that water is stored, from the rainwater stored, to the mikveh. When we open up that tefach wide connection between them, the connection between the two mikvahot, make them into a single mikveh, and through that, the waters in the mikveh become now mikveh waters, and the boar remains, and we close up the boar again, and we do this every time. That way you could drain it, you can take the water in and out, and it's not a problem. So that's what we use hashaka for today, and if you go to the southern excavations in Yerushalayim, and other times you see mikvahot in Eretz Yisrael from antiquities, they had the same thing. They had a collection pool where the water was collected. There's a little hole between that and where the actual mikveh was to allow for this hashaka to take place. So what we have here from Rish Lakish, the neighbor of Ushaya, is if you, for instance, have this water that was supposed to be for the nisuch hamayim, it became tameh, and now you want to make it tahor. Now, truthfully, they could draw water from the well that is inside of the mikdash. As Rashi says, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of undertaking, and therefore they didn't want to do that. They want to use the water they brought from the Meshiloach from prior to Shabbat. So what can you do? You do hashaka. You dip it into, he says, into the Amat HaMayim that's flowing through the Mikdash, and you can make it tahor again. But this Braita says something interesting. It says that's only true if you did not make them Kodesh yet. If you have yet to be Makdishtem, then you can do this hashaka, and then they're tahor, and be Makdishtem. On the other hand, if you already were Makdishtem and designated them Bik Dusha, by placing them into a kli sharet, or saying that they are kadosh for nisuch hamayim, in that case, hashaka won't help anymore. And now he asks, Rabbi Yirmiyahu asks, Mali heshikan v'charka hekdishan? What's the difference between hashaka first, you make them tahor, and then you make them kodesh? Mali hekdishan v'charka hekdishan? Heshikan. And what's the difference if they were kodesh, and then afterwards he does the hashaka? Alma, what do you see from this? There's only one conclusion you come from this, that ein zriah lehekdesh. Zriah doesn't work for hekdesh. Zriah here is the concept of submerging this water in the mikveh and planting. It's as if you're planting. It's as if you're mechaber and join it to the waters of the mikveh, planting inside the mikveh, and that's why it becomes tahor. So what Rabbi Yirmiyahu points out over here is that from a halachic standpoint, from a core halachic standpoint, there should be no difference between whether the item is chulin and you do hashaka, or whether the item is kodesh and you do hashaka. Hashaka should work in both of these instances. Yet, we have a statement here that it does not work. Why doesn't it work? He said, because there is no concept of zriah in kodoshim. By kodoshim, zriah is not successful at helping you out. Hanami, so too in our case over here, ein zriah litruma. Zriah does not help out with truma. So what does that mean, ein zriah litruma? Well, we already know that if you plant truma, it remains truma. So, of course, that's the case. So, that it means that it's asur the zarin, because we know once you plant truma, it's still truma. The Mishnah says that when you plant this object in the ground, it's tahor militame. You can no longer convey tuma. You no longer can pass that tuma forward. So then what is it over here that we say it's no zriah for hekdesh? And we're trying to extrapolate that there's no zriah for tuma. So Rashi explains it. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that over here it means that not only is it asur the zarim, it's also asur the kohanim. That this remains asur for kohanim as well. Rashi explains it. It's in the second wide line in Rashi. The afagav, the mahanya zriah l'chulin. Even though zriah helps out for chulim, avud rabbanan mala, to lo tahani l'chuma. It will not help by chuma, la'lot la tahara gimura. It will not give it full tahara, leheter achila, in order to permit you to eat it at this point. Miu, milatame taharu, to lahalo avid mala. It will no longer convey tuma. So in terms of conveyance of tuma, that the zriah is successful at. In terms of removing the chuma, not successful. Chuma that goes in remains chuma. But in addition to the Rabbanan imposed that when you plant chuma tmeya, when it comes out, it's still chuma tmeya. Even though mina Torah, what came out, chuma tehora, nevertheless, midrabbanan, we say that it is chuma Torah. Now, it might be true, even midoraita, that what comes out is chulin tehorin. But we know for sure by chuma, we didn't allow it to not be chuma afterwards. We discussed why. That might have to do a difference with Zaro Kala and Ain Zaro Kala. Midoraita, there might be a difference. Midorabanan, we say everything is problematic. It remains Truma afterwards. Number two is, even if it was Tamei, it is not Tahor after the fact. It's Tahor Mila Tamei. It won't cause Truma to other things, but it itself will remain Truma Tameya, and Zorim cannot eat it, and Kohanim cannot eat it. And that is the solution that Rabbi Yirmiyah proposes over here. He says those Babylonians are all wrong. Rav Sheshet's got it wrong. For sure, because he says it's Asur the Kohanim because of Hesach Adat. He says it has nothing to do with Hesach Adat. This is all a maila of what the Chachamim imposed over here. Rabba said it's Asur the Zarim, Mutar the Kohanim. He says that's wrong as well. The problem here is both for Kohanim and for Yisraelim. And that's Rabbi Yirmiyah's explanation of the Mishnah in Trumot. Now, we have a question that's posed. Yotiv Rav Dimi. Now, Rav Dimi is another one of those individuals that travels back and forth to Eretz Yisrael. So this story took place with Ravin and Rabbi Yirmiyah. Over here we have Rav Dimi also bringing back this same memra from Eretz Yisrael. He said over this item, and Amar Lei Abayi. And now Abayi asked him a question. So it's clear that he brought it back to Bavel to speak. Either he's telling it to Rav Yosef, to Abayi. And now Abayi has a question about this memra that they're getting from Rav Yirmiyah. Hek Dishan B'Kli Kamar Avopeh Lo Avod Rabbanan Malo Odim Avopeh Nami Avod Rabbanan Malo. How kadosh does the item have to be in order to have this institution or this imposition to Rabbanan that says that Zriah no longer works? Does it have to be something that has kedushat aguf? Kedushat aguf means that it was either put into a kli sharet or by karbanot that you're makdishit in a manner that makes it, puts kedushah on it, if it's a tamim, make it for a korban. Or is it enough kedushat apeh, which is the equivalent of kedushat tamim, something that doesn't have kedushat aguf, but it has kedushat to it because you spoke about it. How much kedusha do you need inside of this item on this object in order for zriah not to work? So Amalei, so Rav Dimi says back to Meloshim Zuloti. I don't know. In our case, I don't know. Kiyotza Bashamati, but I heard a similar case that should answer the question, which is Damar Rabbi Boam Rabbi Yochanan, Anavim Shinitmeu. You have grapes that became tmeim. Darchan Vacharkachik Dishan. If he presses them, and then afterwards is makdish them, tehorim, they're tahor. Hek Dishan. On the other hand, if they're Kodesh first, and then afterwards he presses them, Meim. It doesn't work. They're Atame. Vaha Anavim. The case here of grapes is Kedushata Peninu. It's got to be Kedushata Peh. Vaha Afilu Achi Avod Rabbanan Malo. And despite the fact that they are Kedushata Peh, the Rabbanan made a Malo over here. Now, how do you know that the Anavim over here are Kedushata Peh? Number one is, what's the Malo of the Chachamim? The Malo of the Chachamim is that we know Rabbi Yochanan said before, we saw this back on Lamed Gimel, Rabbi Yochanan believes that by the juices of the grape, mifkad kide, that they are encapsulated inside of the grape, and therefore if you take a tamei grape, you can press it and still get the liquids to be out to be tahor. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan over here says, if you press them and you were makdish them first, the liquids that come out are tameim, despite the fact that you could, if they're mifkad kide, it shouldn't be a problem. And as Rashi explains, what's the milu by kodoshim? The milu is, the avu rabbanu milu by kodoshim, the mitame mashke ima ochel, v'lohum rinamuhu mashkin mifkad kide. We no longer say mifkad kide, we say mivla b'liye. And therefore, you cannot extract the liquid without it becoming tamei. So that's the milah that we have by kodashim. How do we know that it's kedushat apeh over here? Because What are you talking about? What is the only thing that Kimam Tam Kadosh over here? Here you makdish the grapes. Grapes aren't something that can be brought inside the Mikdash and have Kedushat Aguf. The only way you can get Kedushat Aguf is if it's something that goes on the Mizbeach or it's something that's placed in a Kli Sharet. Grapes do neither of those. They don't go on the Mizbeach and they don't get placed inside the Kli Sharet. It's the wine that the Nisuch HaYayin that does, and here we're talking about grapes that are Tmeim. So if you're talking about something that's Hekdisham, Ulusof, then he's Darcham, then they're still in the grape form. If they're still in the grape form, the Kedushah has to be Kedushat HaPeh and not Kedushat HaGuf. So, or Kedushat Kli Sharet, because the Sharet won't do anything for grapes. They have no interaction with grapes. So because of that, we show from here that Kedushat HaPeh also has the same din of Ein Zriah, or basically that there's a Mala of Chachamim here, that despite the fact that generally we see something as being Mifkad Pekideh, and you could extract the juice, B'tahara, nevertheless, once it's Kodesh, we don't do that anymore. The Chachamim established this Mala, that by Kodeshim, there's problems of Tumah, even in instances where by Chulin it would be totally fine. So now, we have a little question or Rabbi Yochanan's statement, which is, it says, Darchan, you can just press them any way you want. You can stomp on them, press them, and there's no consideration of size over here. Afilu Tuba, as much as you want. Umi Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hochi, did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Avim Shnit Mu Darchan Pachot Pachot Mikabetza. Rabbi Yochanan says you have to press them, stomp them, less than a kabetza at a time. So that the tumah of the ochlim is not conveyed to the liquid because it's less than a kabeitza. And ochlim only mitameh, only convey tumah when they're the size of a kabeitza. So how come over here you're talking about something that's bigger than a kabeitza? See, by tema, some say, achanami pachot pachot mi kabeitza. That's what he means over here. When he means that you darchan means pachot pachot mi kabeitza. He doesn't say it here, but that's defined or qualified by what we saw before. Vi by tema, some say here, no, it's different. Hotam denagulu berisham. In that case, it's a case where they touched a rish on the tumah, and the grapes are now a sheni the tumah. The havalu inu sheni. So the grapes themselves are a sheni the tumah. Hocha, in our case over here, is the nagu b'sheni. They touched a sheni the tumah. The havalu shlishi. And that they were then a shlishi le tumah. So what's the difference over here? So now you would have thought the difference over here, the easy way to thought you would have thought the difference over here is that you're talking about truma. If you're talking about truma, truma ends at shlishi the tumah. Doesn't go on shlishi the tumah. But that's not the way that Rashi explains it over here. Rashi says, Vafo pishein chulin. Even though these grapes here are chulin, the chola pusela to truma mitamei mashkim liot chit. Anything that causes a truma to be pasul, meaning a sheni the tumah, that comes into contact with something and that's truma, it would make it a shlishi. The tumah would make it pasul. The chachamim were gozer in such liquids, they make everything into a rishon tumah. So therefore, in this case, if you have the grapes that are a sheni the tumah, if they touch the liquids, they're going to make the liquids into a rishon the tumah. So that's why it's problematic. On the other hand, sheni oseh shlishi b'truma lo garsinan. And Rashi eliminates this idea that this, we're talking about truma. Taha b'chulin askinan. We're definitely dealing with chulin over here. Because if you're dealing with truma, then what did we just say before? We just said before, if you're in kodesh and truma, that this type of pressing doesn't help you. That's exactly what we just heard from the previous statement. Your statement is that this process only works in Chulin. It doesn't work in Kodeshim. It doesn't work in Truma. So obviously we're not talking about Truma here because we're talking about it being successful and working. So if it's successful and working, we're obviously talking about Chulin. Despite the fact that we're talking about Chulin, there's a difference between whether it became Tamei through a Rishon the Tuma, the grip, or became Tamei through a Sheni Tuma. If it becomes Tamei from a Rishon the Tuma, the Ochel is a Sheni Tuma, Midoraita, then Midorabanan, that Sheni the Tuma will cause the liquids to become a Rishon the Tuma. That'll be problematic. Because then it can convey tumah, midrabanan, but it can convey tumah. That's why you have to do pachot pachot mikabetza. On the other hand, if the item here became tamei through a sheni the tumah that touches a shlishi the tumah, now we know by chulin everything ends at sheni the tumah, except for Rabbi Akiva, everything ends at a sheni the tumah. So sheni the shlishi is someone who's doing chulin al pi tarata truma. He's doing chulin, but he wants to hold it to the standards of truma. He wants to hold it to the standards of kodesh. So that's how he gets the shlishi and chulin. Now that shlishi and chulin is basically an institution, the Rabbonon, it's a mala that's put in there. But once it becomes a shlishi the tumah, if it now touches the liquids, it doesn't do anything to the liquids. The liquids aren't affected by the shlishi the tumah. So because if you did it al tarat truma, there's no revi'i the truma, and there's nothing to speak about here. This doesn't have that institution, the Rabbonon, that makes it into a tchila. So that would be the difference in the two cases over here. In one case, it's tuma that can cause a problem, so that's why you have to do a pachot mikabetza. Like it's a tumah that cannot cause a problem, and therefore you don't have to do pachot, pachot, mi kebeitza. Amarava, af anan namitanina. We also have a Mishnah that proves this idea that there's such a concept called mala bekodoshim. And that is, V'natan alav mayim chayim el keli. You must place, this is for the para aduma, you must place the live spring water into the utensil, and then you put the efer chatat onto that. You place the efer chatat into that water. Shetei chiyutan bikli, that they have to be alive in the kli. Rashi explains this to mean that you have to take the water directly from the spring into the kli, into the utensil, that will have the efer put in it. You cannot transfer it from utensil to utensil. If you drew the water with one utensil or one bucket, you can now pour it into another bucket and then do the kedushat efer chatat in there. Whatever bucket you drew it with, that's the bucket you have to use, or that's the kli that you have to use, and the efer chatat has to go into that item. That's the way Rashi explains it. Despite the fact, v'natan, the pasuk says v'natan. Natan means to place it. Natan alav mayim el keli. You will take the water and place it into the kli. Well, taking the water and placing the kli sounds like there's some intermediary between them. There's another kli that was there that took the water in the spring and put it into this kli. So it sounds like from the Torah you could use multiple kelim. So why is it if you could use multiple kelim, why are we demanding only one kli over here, the original kli? So the answer is, Alma, from this you see, Tlushim Ninu. Vaha Mechubarim Ninu. What do you mean? We consider them Tlushim. We consider it as if it's Talush, despite the fact that it is Mechubar. Ela Mala. But that's a Mala that we have by the Paraduma, by Kodoshim. So the Milo over here, or the concept over here is that Midrabonon, since we require you to draw them directly from the spring into this Keli, so that they chiyutamikli, and they're abundant based on that, said that that water, if you move it from Keli to Keli, it becomes problematic. Even though the water was mechubar, it was part of a spring, and you're just moving it from Keli to Keli, it should be no problem at all. Despite that fact, the Chachamim consider as if it's talush, they make it into water as if it's no longer spring water when you do that. How do they do that? That's a malo dirabanon. That's the way Rashi explains it. Other than Tosavot says about Rashi's explanation, Perisha Kuntris, Dachuk. The explanation of Rashi is very difficult. He says, I don't understand the explanation of Rashi. But this is the explanation. I have a much simpler explanation over here, which is that the requirement that Vinatan is that you consider them to be Lushim. Consider them to be separate. Now, there's a requirement here that you draw the water directly from the spring. You go into the spring and you directly take the water out of the spring. You submerge the bucket into the spring and you take the water out. On the other hand, here it says, V'natan alav mayim chayim el keli. The pasuk seems to say V'natan, which is that it is permissible to, or you're allowed to direct the water from the spring into the kli. You don't have to submerge the kli directly into the water. You can have the water directed into the kli. You can put a board there, you can do something, and direct the water into the kli and it should be fine. V'natan alav. It sounds like you can direct it into the kli and you'd be totally fine. So what does that say? So what do you see from this? The Natan tells you that they have a classification like Lushim. That when you redirect the water, it's as if you've detached the water from the spring and it's no longer kosher for the Mechatat, the Mepara over here. So because of that, what do you mean? This water is attached. This water is a part of a spring. You're just redirecting the water. What's the problem over here? Ella what? It's a malo derabonon. This is a malo derabonon that even though it's still considered to be mechubar, even though it's still considered to be spring water, despite that fact, we classify it as if it's talush. When you redirect the water, it's as if you disconnected that water, despite the fact that it's really mechubar. And that's why we force you to submerge the kli into the spring and not direct the spring water into the kli. So that's the way Tosafot learns it. Now, according to Tosafot, it's easy to understand over here why this is connected to the previous Gemara because talking about Tlushim Mechubarim. It should be classified as Mechubar, yet the Chachamim call it Talush, similar to what we have by the case of the water. When you want to submerge the water and do Hashaka, so over there we say that it, even though it's Mechubar, we consider it as if it's Talush. So we understand why it's a proof to that case. For Rashi, it's much more difficult. Rashi is saying, you know, it has to do with Paraduma, from pouring from Kli to Kli. It's a Maila that, what's that Maila have to do with the issue of Hashaka? So the answer is most likely that it just shows us that the Rabbanan made these malot in Kodoshim. It gives us a paradigm that the Chachamim did make malot, even though it's not the same mala, but they are malot in the Kodoshim. Hachanami, malot. So too over here, by Truma, there is a malot. Amar Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi says, Afanan Nami Tanina. We also learned this from the Mishnah. Taval V'ala. Ochel B'maser. He goes to the mikveh, and then he comes out of the mikveh, he's a tvuyom, he's allowed to eat maser. Hariv shimshol, the sun sets on that day, ochel b'truma. He's allowed to eat truma now. B'chuma in, b'kodoshim lo. He's allowed to eat chuma, but he's not eat kodoshim. This is talking about someone who still has to bring a korban afterwards, like a zav, zavah, you let it. They're mechusar kipurim. So now, despite the fact that it's tahor, you're not allowed to eat kodoshim. Amai! Why can't you eat kodoshim tahor? When the sun sets, you're completely tahor. Why can't you eat the kodoshim? Ella, malo. This is a malo, hachanami malo. Over there it's a malo, so too over here, by our case of chuma, it's a malo. What's the malo over there? That seems to be a malo de oraita. That's mina Torah. And that's what, Rashi has a girsa here that's the Rabbanon. But Tosafot back, if you look back on Yutet Amud Aleph, Tosafot over there says it's clearly talking about a malo de oraita, and showing us that the Torah made even malo by kodoshim. Rashi over here, they're different girsot than Rashi. The way we have Rashi says that the Rabbanon made a malo, but there are other older girsot of Rashi that don't have the word Rabbanon in it, and that would indicate that he believes it's also de oraita. Then we have one last proof. Amar Vashi, Afanan Namitanina, Vehabasar. That's from the Pasuk that is found in Vayikra Zion Pasuk Yutet, which is, Vasar Sheyga Bechotame, Lo Yachel Bashisarev. Then the latter half of the Pasuk is, Vabasar Kotahor Yochal Basar. We said before, we learned this in the first parak, that the word Basar here is extraneous. They don't need it. There's an extra word Basar. What do we do with this Vabasar? This comes to teach us, or about it, Eitzim Luvona. This is what we call Chibat HaKodesh. Chibat HaKodesh tells you that even things that are inedible, things that are not kelim and not food, yet could still be mekabel tumah because of chibat hakodesh. We know that from this word v'habasar. Rashi claims it's for the extra vav, the vav v'habasar. Tosfos claims it's from the word basar. Extra, the whole word basar is extraneous. Therefore, etzim uluvona are considered to be tmeim. The Gemara says, etzim uluvona b'nei tmuyei nid. Since when are wood and frankincense mekabel tumah? They're not ochel, they're not a kli. Ela malo. That's a malo. Hachanami malo. So do it's a malo. Now Rashi, back on Yutet, in the Gemara says that malo, this is a din der abonon. Chibat HaKodesh is a completely a din der abonon. And like these other items over here, these are all malo der abonon. Even though the middle case here might not be a malo der abonon, even though Rashi here says it is, according to the way Rashi writes it here, these all three are malo der abonon, and that's it. And this is malo der abonon. Tosafot, back on Yutet, Amalav, argued on Rashi and says Chibat HaKodesh is a din d'oraita, and I can prove it to you. You know, I can prove to you it's a din d'oraita, because the case before also said malo, and that's clear. The Mechusar Kippurim is a din d'oraita. And there we said it's a malo. So when it uses the word here, malo, it doesn't mean d'rabbana, it means d'oraita. And that means that d'oraita, itzim levona, have a din of chibat hakodesh. And so based on that, we show or we prove this concept of malot in kodoshim in truma. And that means that even though normally zriah would work, zriah meaning both hashaka, submerging something into the water, or zriah planting something would work, and get rid of the tumah and take care of these issues. Nonetheless, the Chachamim imposed malot in all of these cases to differentiate kodashim and tumah to say that despite the fact that it should work, it doesn't work. And that's the higher level or higher status that they granted to kodashim and tumah to say it doesn't work. And that's how we'll explain the mission over there. Why, after you plant it, can nobody eat it? Because even despite the fact that it's now tumah tehorah, nevertheless, nobody's allowed to eat it because the Chachamim made it tumah tmei'ah. Okay, we'll stop over here.